I want to welcome you to the Retro Rogues Live podcast. This is a segment from last week's live video show. You can find either one of the live video shows on either Thursday at 7 p.m. or Sundays at 12:05. And now, on with the show.
I want to welcome you to the Retro Rogues Live. Please pay attention to our warning graphic. It states that the Retro Rogues Live show is intended for an adult audience and not intended for children under the age of 13. Parental discretion is advised. I want to welcome you to episode 144 of the Retro Rogues Live. On today's episode, we're going to be doing a Rogues retrospective for Robotech. We're going to be talking primarily about the Macross saga, but the conversation might kind of go from there. We'll also be talking a little bit about some news about a Pokemon live action movie. Kurtzman continues, I guess. We'll be talking a little bit about that. If we have time, we might even discuss Iron Man. What? Anyhow, enough about that. My name is Dave Bate. I'm one of your hosts. For the last 30 years, I've been a professional illustrator, graphic designer, worked on a lot of fun things that some people have heard of, such as Batman, Incorporated, Justice League of America, and even Superboy and the Legion of Superheroes. But enough about that. I want to welcome back my great co-host. This is Mr. Eric Alexander. Eric, please tell the folks, hopefully watching or listening at home, some of the fun things you have worked on as a creative professional.
Yes, hello, everyone. I'm Eric Alexander, known as Bass God 14. That's Bass God 14, not Bass God. That's Bass God, like a bass guitar. Now, the chief financial officer of Bad Bob Productions, which is a small film production company located in Arizona. Currently, I am the executive producer on a film called Staycation, which is actually filming, I believe, as we speak, or maybe just wrapping up. I'll have to get with Russ later to find out exactly what's going on, but I know he's working hard on Staycation.
Very cool. Very cool. All right. So here at the top of the show, just real quick, I was hoping to have a little bit more information about what's coming up, but there's still a few more things I need to finalize, but I'm going to go ahead and tease this here real quick. I posted this on social media. This is the first Kirby Tease Original Superheroes trading card. This is from Atom Man. This is actually a public domain character. It's been around since 1946, created by Ken Crossman and the great Jerry Robinson. Me asking yourself, Dave, why are you talking about this? Because this is a cool limited edition trading card. You're going to be able to purchase, actually it comes with a purchase, of a Kirby Tease t-shirt. I'm going to be doing the Fandom Mania event, actually in Prescott Valley, that's coming up in 2 weeks. I'll have a little bit more information about that, actually for next week's show, as well as hopefully be able to actually show off the actual final version of the shirt. I am still working on it. As we speak, running tests, the front of the shirt is going to look something like this, but I'm trying to get a nice distressed kind of a look for the front. So it's going to look kind of like a vintage superhero kind of thing. But I'm still working on this, running some tests, trying to get everything just right. But hopefully I'll have that actually for next week, and I'll actually give you the actual physical dates. But if you search for Prescott Valley Fandom Mania, you're going to be able to find it anyway. I haven't been announced on the website, but that should be coming up here pretty soon. And just want to put that out there. And like I said, these are some pretty cool trading cards, everybody. You better get them with a purchase of that Kirby Tease t-shirt. There is a back, by the way, that's got information actually about Atom Man. But enough about that.
Very cool looking, Dave. That's the first time I've had a chance to see them, and they look awesome. Look very, very cool.
Well, and it's interesting because I'm trying to have it kind of all kind of fit and kind of feel kind of cool. So the t-shirt's going to look really, really kind of fun and vintage and very retro. And then the card itself, if you notice, is actually patterned after a lot of those, the Marvel Wave Series 3. I always like the look of the Series 3 cards. And I thought they were kind of neat. So I thought, well, let's do something kind of like that, you know? So, but that's the first one, Atom Man. I'll have more information about the next one here coming up. Before I get to Fandom Mania, you're going to see another card, but I don't want to say who it is just yet. So.
Very cool. Jane says she won. I think you can facilitate that, right?
Yeah. And to be honest with you, I'll probably, you know, throw a, you know, one of these in actually as people kind of do. You know, we encourage people comment during the show when we do contests and stuff. We don't really announce the contest. I just kind of on the fly decided to do a contest. And all you need to do is actually comment during the show. And if you comment during the show and if your name goes into a hat, we draw it out. then you typically will win something. So these cards, some of these, a small portion of them will actually be going out with those as well from this point on, since I actually now have them in the studio.
Very, very cool. Jane also was saying that she said, I accidentally watched a previous episode last Sunday. I was actually on time, and I wondered why I had no reaction to any of my comments. Laugh out loud. That is funny, Jane. I could see how that could happen, actually, though. I could totally see how that could happen. We do have a large catalog at this point, a large, you know, archive of previous episodes. So it is easy to make that mistake. And Asia's in the house, and she says, hello, darlings. Hello, Asia. It's good to see you. And we had a previous comment that was even before the show started from YouTube. I hope he's still around. I'm guessing that's Brightest Day, because it's spelled a little weird. And he says, love me some Robotech. So hopefully this episode will be for you then, if you're still around Brightest Day, because that's what we're going to be talking about.
I have a great fondness for Brightest Day, because I actually worked on Brightest Day, the series for DC Comics. Scott Clark and I worked on all the Firestorm stuff actually for Brightest Day. So
very cool.
I don't talk much about Brightest Day, because Brightest Day is not something that's, you say Justice League, people know what you're talking about. You say Superboy and Legion of Superheroes, people know what you're talking about, you know, but when you say some of the other series I worked on, like Brightest Day, it's like, you know, does that come from the Green Lantern Oath? Like, some people might recognize that, but, you know, you'll mostly know it if you actually read Brightest Day. But yeah, Scott Clark and I worked on that. It's one of my, that actually is, to this day, of all the stuff we did at DC Comics, that is my single favorite series, entire series that we worked on. And I'm very, very proud of the work that we did on Brightest Day.
Very cool. Very, very cool.
Awesome. Very cool. All right. We are going to be talking about, obviously, Robotech here. That is going to be our Rogues retrospective. I do have one thing I'm going to show off here real quick, right at the top. I had mentioned on a previous episode, when we talked about Robotech, they had something kind of cool here in the studio. A billion years ago, when I worked at Animated Jax, our boss Mitch had quite a reference library of books and different things that we could pull from. And one of the coolest books that was in there was actually a Robotech book. And I always thought it was really cool. And I was constantly pulling it down and looking at it and referencing it and whatever. And I thought it was really neat. And when I left Animated Jax, it was funny because Scott Clark had actually borrowed some books too from Animated Jax. And so we had to obviously return all those when I left Animated Jax, right? But I always thought this book was really cool, and I had told Scott about it. He'd never actually seen it. And then it was really pretty darn cool that he's like, well, I know some people. Maybe I could track down a copy of it. And I was like, yeah, sure, whatever. I didn't think anything of it. And then for Christmas one year, lo and behold, he actually did track down a couple copies. He had one for himself, and he actually gave me one actually for Christmas. So this is an actual Super Dimension Fortress 1 Macross. This is animation book, and this has a lot of artwork in it actually from Macross. Now you'd be asking yourself, well, what makes this unique? Well, number one, if you notice, it turns the wrong direction, and it's actually in Japanese. Let me find a cool page. I opened it up to a cool page earlier. I should have bookmarked it. So this has a lot of really cool stuff in here, you know, kind of like not really full turnarounds, but essentially turnarounds. And then there's really neat sections. I often wonder like what actually is being said, because I have no idea. those pages are definitely washing out. Let's go back to the other ones. But some really, really cool artwork in this book. And this book actually came out in 1983, everybody. It is also vintage. It is super mega vintage and straight from Japan. But a very, very cool Robotech thing. This is actually the coolest Robotech thing I own. And one of the few things I own, too, by the way. But I talked about it on a previous episode, so I wanted to show that just real quickly at the top of the show.
It's good that you have that, because I think that's even a good way to kind of start out with this discussion. is a lot of people, they might be a little confused about what Robotech actually is. Now, we're going to be specifically focusing mostly on the Macross saga, but it's important to note that Robotech isn't just the Macross saga. There are two other elements to Robotech, and Robotech is kind of unique. The one that kind of comes to my mind that did something somewhat similar is Voltron, where they took these three unrelated, Japanese, cartoons, these three different animes, and basically for broadcast reasons, because the way that they broadcasted, children's entertainment, at that time was different. In other words, they needed more episodes. This is back in the days when you had syndicated cartoons that were shown every single day, right? And in the Japanese market, they didn't do it that way. They did it more like any other television show. It was on once a week. So the episodes, the one season of an animated show, might be like something similar to what we have here, where it's like 24 or 30 episodes, something like that. Whereas, in the American market, you needed way more episodes because these shows would air every single day. So what Harmony Gold did was kind of unique, is that they took these three completely unrelated, Japanese animes, and they made them to one actually pretty cohesive story, which is really interesting. They basically made it like three generations to kind of work over, the fact that you you don't see any of these characters, intermingle, except maybe like in flashbacks where they might be talking about the previous characters from the other iterations. So I think it's kind of interesting because, that is part of the big, it's almost like a controversy sometimes when it comes to Robotech, because there are purists out there that really, they really dig the Macross saga. And it was a huge phenomenon in Japan, much more so than the other two shows. And, here, because of the way Harmony Gold got the rights, it's a very different experience because, again, Robotech is these three unrelated shows that they basically, tried to write into a cohesive story, which I think is really interesting. It's one of the aspects of Robotech that makes it kind of unique. Like I said, the only thing I can think of similar is Voltron. Voltron did something similar in that, there's the lion Voltron, which is by far the most popular, but then there's the vehicle Voltron. And that was, again, a completely unrelated show that they incorporated into Voltron because they needed more episodes. They wanted more episodes and what the standard, Japanese anime was. They needed more.
Yeah, and I think, and I could be wrong, but I think the vehicle Voltron, I think it was actually called Dairuger or something like that. I forget. I always wanted to try and see if I could actually find, like, if there was a dubbed or even a English captioned version of the vehicle Voltron. Its own separate series, just to see what that was like. Apart from, the Lion Force, version of Voltron.
Yeah, that goes for the same for Robotech. I've actually been very curious. I know there have been releases of all three of these shows in their original format, where they're basically, it's the original Japanese, version of the three different shows that comprise Robotech. But I've never seen them. I've never even seen Macross, which, of course, I know that Macross is like a huge phenomenon. Macross is often credited as basically starting the whole transformable robot craze in Japan, which eventually led to things like Transformers, here in the United States and all that kind of stuff. In fact, there's an interesting crossover of Transformers and Robotech, which, of course, is the infamous, Jetfire, right?
Right.
Why is there Jetfire and Skyfire? Why does the toy look so much like Robotech? Because it was a Robotech toy. It was a Macross toy. That's what it was. And that actually got into a big legal dispute between Harmony Gold and Hasbro, right? Because they were basically, Harmony Gold was saying you're infringing on our exclusive rights, basically, to distribute Macross in the United States. So to this day, that's a big sticking point. In fact, there's an article that I have here from Forbes, and I'd shared it with Dave earlier. I'm going to share it just really, really quick, just so folks are aware of it, because I think it provides some context to this whole situation. And this is actually a fairly old article. It's from April 9th, and it says, "The decades-long rights battle over Macross and Robotech has finally been resolved." So check this article out. It's really interesting, and it talks about the fact Crossley has like three rights holders at this point, because basically you have the original company. Then for people that don't know, this product itself has had sequels where they did direct sequels simply to Macross. There's a Macross 2, for instance, and that's completely separate from Robotech. That goes just with the Japanese continuity. So it's really interesting because Harmony Gold has held on to these rights for so long, and they will continue to be holding on to these rights. In fact, this article even talks about the fact that they want to make a live-action Robotech movie, and one of the sticking points was, well, how is that going to be distributed in Japan? Because in Japan, they don't have Robotech. In Japan, these are three different shows, two of which weren't that successful, whereas Macross is like a phenomenon. And they basically had to come to an agreement that, you know, allows them to do that Robotech live action movie in Japan, because rights are really interesting, because in this day and age of where you see global franchises and things like that, Robotech is very unique in terms of what's going on with that IP and everything, and what the IP actually is.
Very cool. Yeah, and I definitely encourage people to check it out. It is interesting, all the things going on with Robotech in regards to what is actually happening with the show. And it obviously makes it difficult actually to watch the episodes. Now, I do have a complete collection actually of Robotech. I don't have the box set here. It was a gift from my brother quite a little while ago. And I've been a huge Robotech fan for a long time. And all this stuff is really interesting. I feel like almost kind of like the behind the scenes kind of stuff with Robotech almost makes it even more intriguing as an adult to get into, you know, the fact that it was based off of something before. Because when I was growing up, the only reason I even understood that there were different iterations of Robotech besides watching the show was actually because of the Kimiko comic book series. The Kimiko comic book series was really unique because that was the first time that I actually realized there was a Robotech Macross, there was a Robotech Masters, and a Robotech Generations.
Right.
And so a lot of times, the only reason I even understood that there were three segmented versions of Robotech, essentially, is actually because of the Kimiko comic book series. That's what helped me to understand as a young kid, oh, well, this is this, and then this takes place later, and this is this, and then this takes place even further in the future, and this is this other thing. Because when a lot of the toys came out, it seemed like they came out pretty much all at the same time, and I remember it being kind of confusing a little bit as a kid, because my personal favorite of all the transforming robot stuff is actually the Mars motorcycles or Mars colony motorcycles or whatever they actually use in Generations.
Right.
That's the stuff that I always just thought was the coolest. I love the Veritech fighter, obviously from Macross, but my favorite has always been the transforming motorcycle from Generations.
Yeah, I've always had an affinity for them as well. I've always really liked them. And I think that was, of the three, that was the one other one that I think was pretty popular. You know, it's the middle one, the Southern Cross Saga, also known as the Masters, as you called it. That one usually gets kind of, that one doesn't get anywhere near as much love, you know, so.
Yeah, and it's weird because as a kid, most of the comic books I actually read were actually Masters. Those were the easiest ones to find. Finding Macross issues was really difficult. Finding Generations issues is really difficult. But it wasn't too terribly hard to find Masters issues. So most of the Kimiko Robotech series I read back in the day was actually from Masters.
I think that's the most I have, too, because I have quite a few of the comics as well. And I always liked the comics because I thought they did such a good job of the comics look like the animated series. And that's one thing I really liked about that particular comic book line. It was very easy to access, and it wasn't any different. It was just basically a straight adaptation of the show. But I always really enjoyed the artwork because it looked so much, you know, just like the cartoon.
Right.
You know, whereas, you know, with other, when you talk about Transformers or G.I. Joe, They definitely are much more like their own thing, you know, the comics versus the actual television shows, very much like their own thing. Asia mentioned that she actually has one of those vehicle Voltrons mint in the box. That's pretty cool.
Wow.
I had one of the vehicle Voltrons as well. I don't know what happened to it. It's another one of those things. I don't know where it is. It's in a box we gave away or what, but I did have the vehicle one. I never had the lion one, but I had the vehicle one. So that's very cool. And then she also mentions, he said the Robotech website has been reopened with new merchandise. So that's something that people might want to check out. If you're a fan of Robotech, you can go over to the Harmony Gold's website, and apparently there's some new stuff on there.
Very cool. Very cool. I do have one more thing I want to call out too, real quick, if I can, which is why I'm wearing all this red skirts stuff actually today. I was going to highlight this because a big point of inspiration actually for Al Sparrow and myself, I'm sorry, you can probably hear my dogs barking in the back, is actually Robotech. Red Skirts is about an all-female security team. It started out as this kind of a Star Trek spoof parody type of a series, and it's actually grown way beyond that. We are working on volume 2. I know that is taking incredibly too long, which is probably frustrating for some Red Skirts fans. So let me just apologize right now for how long it's taking, as well as my dogs continuing to bark in the background. but along those lines, one of the things that Robotech actually heavily influenced was actually the design of the main ship, the GGC Audacity. Obviously, it looks like a Trek ship. It's kind of a more of a classic Trek ship. But the thing that makes the Audacity really unique is we did take inspiration from the SDF-1, which is why the saucer is actually split in the middle. Some people might think that's a Millennium Falcon callback, but it's actually not, because if you watch the first episode of Robotech, you'll actually know that the SDF-1, actually the two kind of parts of it kind of split, and that's where the main gun is. Right. And in addition to that, at the heart of the Audacity is actually an entire city. And the whole point of this city being inside this ship with like a fake holographic sky and everything is a direct callback and salute actually to Robotech. So I just thought I'd throw that out there.
I always thought that was a really interesting concept. You know, the fact that there was this entire city inside the SDF-1. I always thought that was really interesting.
I did too, and Al did as well. And when we were discussing Red Skirts when we were first working on it, that was one of the things that we talked about. It'd be kind of cool to nod to Robotech. There's also a little bit of Starship Star Blazers actually in there too. And hopefully we'll be unveiling Volume 2 pretty soon. This is actually a crew hat that some of the characters on the flight crew, the flight deck, because we'll actually be wearing actually in Volume 2. But this is kind of a fun thing that the characters are going to be wearing. And I've actually been making prototypes of this stuff because eventually I want to be able to offer this to fans if they're interested in it. So
very cool. It actually reminds me a lot of the caps that they wear in the Navy when they have their ship caps.
And that was something I was thinking of too. You know, specifically with this doesn't actually come from Robotech. This is just kind of a fun thing that specifically relates to Volume 2 of Red Skirts, because I know a lot of people haven't seen much from it, but there's fighter craft. You know, it's also a little bit of a salute to Battlestar Galactica. There's a Commander Adama kind of character in it. Like, we have a lot of fun things coming up for Red Skirts Volume 2.
Yeah, it's like a love letter to sci-fi. There's no doubt about that.
True.
It's like a love letter to sci-fi. Asia also mentions, he said, I felt the last season of Robotech was the gateway for my love of Bubblegum Crisis, which is a show I've never seen, actually. I've never seen Bubblegum Crisis. I am familiar with it. But she says the city in the SDF-1 also had that Metroplex feel. And I can totally see that. I totally believe it. I agree with that. It does kind of have a little bit of that feel like Metroplex from Transformers. So,
for sure. All right, well, let's go ahead and get into our actually Rogues retrospective, unless we have any more comments.
No, we're caught up.
All right, cool. All right, so obviously Robotech, this is a TV series. It actually what I'm seeing here on IMDb is it actually started in 1985, which is interesting because I thought this book came out at roughly about the same time, but this actually came out in 83, which I was kind of surprised to learn. Yeah, I just didn't think about it. And I didn't think about it in that context, right? And the summary that actually comes here actually from IMDb is an alien spaceship crash lands on Earth, and the technology and secrets she bears lead Earth into three destructive interplanetary wars. That's an interesting way to summarize that. All right. Eric and I actually we're going to do the first two episodes today. That also creates the opportunity. We're willing to talk about Robotech in a larger context, but it actually creates the opportunity that hopefully maybe in future episodes we can continue to do this and revisit Robotech and do different episodes as we want. So we're primarily going to focus on the first two episodes. So this is a Rogues retrospective. You may ask yourself, what is a Rogues retrospective? This basically means we want to talk about how we first heard about the series. We want to talk about how we felt about it when we originally watched it. Those are the first two components. And the last component, the third component, is going to be having recently revisited it. How do we feel about it today? So that's going to be your three segments. That's how we're going to talk about it. And we're going to start off here with talking about how did we first learn or hear about Robotech? And we also want to know, those of you in the Rogues Gallery, please comment. Tell us how you first heard about Robotech, how you first discovered Robotech. We really want to know how you also discovered it. That's what makes this fun for us, is the discussion that we have actually with you. So let's go ahead and start with you, Eric. How did you first hear about Robotech?
Well, I was into a lot of different cartoons as a kid. And I was, you know, like one of those kids that came home from school every day and look at and see what was on, you know, because there was always at least something, you know, back in those days, there was always something on, whether it was He-Man, Transformers, G.I. Joe, you know, something was always on when I came home from school. And so I just happened to come across Robotech. I don't remember hearing anything about it before it came out. I know I remember I watched the first episode, and you know I watched subsequent episodes. I know every once in a while I might miss an episode here and there, maybe even because I was trying to watch something else, because again there was just a lot of stuff on back in the day. And you know this is a syndicated program, which a lot of the cartoons back then were. There was a lot of these programs again that were made to be shown every single day. It wasn't a Saturday morning cartoon that you only saw once a week. These shows were on every single day. So I don't remember any specific hype for Robotech or anything like that. I think I remember it kind of fell off a kid by surprise because we didn't know exactly what it was. But yeah, I just happened to be, you know, probably like channel surfing or something like that and just came across it. What about you, Dave?
Okay, so I remember also it was an after school kind of deal. I remember just flipping the channels. I also had not heard anything about Robotech in advance. I hadn't heard anybody talking about it. And I was flipping the channels and I basically turned on, I didn't actually see Robotech from episode one on until much later. I didn't actually see the first episode of Robotech for actually quite a while. And I think it had come home early, from school because I was sick or something, which is the only reason I even saw it, because when it would actually come on, at least in the Mid-South market where I was a kid, it actually was on actually basically while I was still at school. And so I just happened to see it. It was at some point in episode two, because I remember, you know, Rick Hunter was having issues with trying to figure out how to actually use the Verotech in I forget the different modes. There's the jet mode, there's the guardian mode, and I forget what the actual robot. I just saw it and I still can't remember. Is it battle? Okay.
The battle mode.
It's really funny because I just saw it and I couldn't remember what it was called. but that was the episode I came into it with. And I just thought it was really interesting. I was just intrigued by the robot thing. I've always loved robots. I've always had a fondness for robots. And I just thought it was pretty cool. And then from that point on, we had recently gotten a VCR. And so I had one VHS tape at that time. And so I started setting the timer to record Robotech so that I could watch Robotech actually after I got home from school. Horrifying story. So that tape was actually destroyed in a lightning strike. Mid-South has really bad issues with weather, and there was a really bad lightning storm, and lightning came in through the window and somehow made it to the VCR and fried it and destroyed the tape. And I'd had, yeah, that. So that's how I missed most of a lot of the early Macross episodes, is because basically until we actually went to like a summer break situation. I wasn't really able to watch much of it, which just absolutely horrified me as a kid. But there's a fun little Robotech story. A funny natural disaster also destroyed my Robotech comic book collection. It was actually one of the bottom boxes when my apartment flooded in the 90s, and all my Robotech comic books were completely destroyed. They were pulped into a giant brick of, I don't know, wood almost by the time they dried out.
Asia says that wasn't lightning. That was a Zentradi.
There you go. So that was how I first heard about it. I just was flipping the channels and it just happened to be on. And I came in somewhere within episode 2 and I thought it was really cool. And I made an effort to try and watch it actually from that point on, because I thought it was pretty neat.
Yeah. It's funny that you talk about that, because I do remember there were several cartoons that I would only see in the summer months because they were on while I was at school. For me, Robotech wasn't one of them. In fact, Asia, she grew up in Arizona as well. And she says, Channel 45 and AZ at 5:30 p.m. I didn't realize it was on that late, but it was on Channel 45. We grew up in the same market. Says our entire family is full of OG nerds. The commercials were playing for it. It became something my whole family sat and watched. My dad found it, and we would schedule dinner around it. So that's pretty interesting that in her case, it was actually her father who first knew about it and got the family into it. And then Hollywood Jackson's the house, so I just want to say hey to Hollywood Jackson. We appreciate you being here.
Well, that's really interesting. So it sounds like, at least with me, and then Eric, it's kind of a similar thing. You just happened to find it on the television.
Yeah, I just stumbled across it. I don't remember anybody talking about it or anything like that. Because I know I saw the first episode. Because these episodes that we're going to be talking about, they're the ones that are freshest in my mind, because I remember watching them and the whole thing with Rick not even being a fighter pilot, you know? So.
Right. Which is weird, because then you watch the opening credits, which I consider like a classic. You know, he's obviously the one in the cockpit. He's actually, you know, obviously the star of the show, at least as mm-hmm. far as the intro credits would have you believe. And it's just really interesting that, you know, the first several episodes, he is definitely not a fighter pilot at all. He is definitely a skilled pilot, but he is definitely not a fighter pilot at all, which is really interesting. Because I just think of him synonymously in that flight suit with that flight helmet, you know, and that's not kind of the version of him that you get actually in the early episodes. And it's interesting too, like how much time actually passes in these episodes, because there's actually a lot of it's actually in real time. This is one of the first times I even remember as a kid where you needed to tune back in or you were missing something, because it was chronological. It was serialized. You know, you had to go from one episode to the next episode because I was being forced to skip around because it was on when I was at school. By the time I would jump back into it, I will have missed like an episode or two and I would be really confused, which is why I started actually trying to record them, is so I could fill in the gaps, because sometimes not a lot would happen in the episodes. And by that, I mean, it's a pretty compressed period of time. And in other times, you've got a huge gap in time between episodes. Like there's a lot of other stuff that happens and they just kind of go over it with narration. Right. That's obviously for a later episode, but it's interesting how they play with time and how it's serialized. What about for you, Eric? I mean, do you remember this being one of the first serialized shows like this?
Yeah, it was certainly one of the first serialized shows that, you know, I watched, because, you know, everything else was very episodic. And if you missed an episode, it really didn't matter. If you missed an episode of G.I. Joe, it really didn't matter. So it's kind of interesting in that regard. I guess it's more like some of the early like mini series that they had for G.I. Joe, where that was a continuous story, you know. But by the time it was a full-fledged series, it wasn't like that anymore. So I remember having the same experience where I would kind of get lost because I would miss a few episodes and I didn't know what was going on. I mentioned before, these are three different shows. So I remember being like, what the hell happened to everybody? Like, who are these people? You know what I mean? I remember having that experience, especially with Southern Cross. I remember having that kind of experience where I missed the episode that established that the main character was actually the daughter of two of the main characters from the Macross saga, you know, because that's the way that they would connect the shows. And I, I missed that. And I was like completely lost. And I was like, I don't understand what's going on, you know? And then by the third series, they talk about Rick Hunter all the time. In Generations, they would mention his name. They would name drop him all the time. So at least I kind of knew, it was like, okay, so this is the same thing, you know? So I was like, you know, so it would get confusing, especially as a kid. And the fact that I think most of us growing up at that time, we were not used to a serialized, you know, animated show. It just wasn't a common thing, unless, you know, you had one of those, like, those specials, those, like, early mini-series things. It was, you know, it was actually, like, one continuous story, you know? So, yeah, I remember getting confused quite a bit. And Jane had her version of that story you were talking about earlier, Dave. And she said, we had just bought a new TV and first VCR. A few days later, lightning blew the TV and fried the VCR, blew the hanging lamp and the washer, she says. So that's crazy. I remember when we got our first VCR, and that would have been so traumatizing. So poor Dave, poor Jane.
Well, and there was a lady, because there was a lady there who was actually coming to check on my grandmother. I don't remember the exact circumstances. We don't need to get all the way into that, but I know that she was there to check on her. And it was really weird because that lady was sitting in front of the television when the lightning came in and basically essentially fried and blew up the VCR. So apparently she was sitting there for the whole experience. And apparently she was having a hard time hearing shortly thereafter.
Yeah, I remember growing up, my parents would actually, we'd have to turn when we, because we recently even just had some pretty bad monsoons here. I actually have a leak in my house. It's how bad it got over here where I live. And it's kind of funny because I do remember my parents as a kid, when the monsoons came, we had to turn off the TV. That's why. That's why. So,
yeah.
And then Asia had another little story too. Where she said, until we got a VCR, we had to write everything down for her dad. So if he was late for work, they would have to tell him what happened. So I think that's pretty fun.
That's really cool. And I remember too, like that jump actually to Masters was so incredibly jarring for me. And actually the thing that explained to me what was going on was actually the Kimiko comic books. The Kimiko comic books was actually what filled in enough of the gap that I understood. I was like, oh, it's a time jump. And then I can't remember the main character's name for Masters, but
I think it's Dana Sterling.
Yeah. She's
Sterling's daughter.
Right. And then the Zentradi lady, right? I can't remember her name either.
Mira, right. I think it was Mira right. Sterling.
Man, that's now. And here's something I want to throw out too. This is something specifically I want to talk about. You see some of it in these first two episodes, and it carries over pretty heavy in the show going forward. But I sometimes describe certain kinds of genre entertainment as almost being kind of, well, it is melodramatic, right? And it's, I sometimes say it's kind of like soap opera for nerds, right? Like if you're into genre entertainment, you know, if you like transforming robots and jets and fighting aliens, you know, but then you also have your Erica Kane drama with her ex and right, like all that kind of stuff. If you're a fan of All My Children from back in the day. So you have kind of, again, this soap opera kind of component. And, you know, Macross specifically was one of the first things, like in a cartoon anyway, that I really remember this stuff kind of play out in the way that it does. These characters are dating. They know each other. We see, obviously, in the first two episodes, the connection made between Minmay and Rick Hunter. We also hear a lot about the relationship between Foker and... I can't remember. I just saw these. And I can't remember her name. Claudia. And then was it Lisa Hayes? She's the kind of the stuck up command. And this is going to sound weird. I always had a thing for Lisa Hayes when I was a kid. I don't know what it was, but I always thought Lisa Hayes was pretty cool. You know,
I was definitely on Team May. I never understood that, to be honest with you. In fact, when I found out about it, that was one of those story plots that I wasn't following, like episodes or something. And then all of a sudden, I'm like, what the heck is Rick doing with her? You know what I mean? Like, so the soap opera element was definitely there. And being putting myself in the shoes as I was as a kid, that's probably the one thing I was familiar with as far as something that was serialized, because I would watch some soap operas with my mom or something like that. So I knew that's the only way I knew of something that was like that. And Robotech was definitely a soap opera in space. There's no doubt about that in my mind. It was definitely, and a lot of anime is, to this day, a lot of anime is very soap opera-ish.
And it's interesting too, because it shows the difference between how content was created, you know, for audiences in Japan to an extent versus how content was created actually for audiences in America by American companies, you know. In Robotech specifically, they try to give you a larger view of these characters' lives in whole, you know, as opposed to just how it directly relates to the main narrative. It's like, oh, this is his girlfriend, you know, and then other than that, you don't really see much else about it. You don't learn much else about it. It's just, you know, the action figure sometimes is on the peg. It's like, oh, that's so-and-so's girlfriend, right? But it doesn't really play a large role other than occasionally a damsel in distress, occasionally thing. But it's interesting to me because in Robotech, they're definitely fully fleshed out characters and you're very much witnessing their lives, you know, and how they unfold in these various situations that they find themselves in. And I just remember as a kid just being, you know, that being part of the appeal for me. You know, that's part of the reason I needed to know what was going on, right? Because like,
yeah,
what's happening with this character and that character? This is the first time as a kid I remember I wanted to know.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, Asia mentions, she says, it had actual deaths, interracial relationships, alien relationships, and Fokker was a bae. Laugh out loud. So, yeah, it's true. It was very, very different. And I remember as a kid, you know, I could see that this was, you know, definitely had a lot more adult themes than your typical animated show at the time. And I appreciated that even as a kid. I could see that. I was like, you know, like I said, there were elements where it reminded me a lot more of like my mom's soap operas than the shows that I was watching.
For sure. So I feel like at this point, is there anything else specifically you want to relate to how you remembered when you first saw these as a kid?
Well, I do remember that the explanation, I remember, was a big thing to me, and it's kind of interesting the way that this especially the first two episodes are structured, because they have to give you a lot of background information so you know, you have some idea what the heck is going on, like you have some context, and a lot of it they go over very quickly. But I remember as a kid, I thought it was really interesting the way that they kind of explain things, because the SDF-1 itself is very mysterious. You know, and they go over that information quick, you know, and the fact that apparently the world was in the middle of another world war, they go over that really quick, you know, and, you know, apparently the world became united because of this alien craft that was found on Macross Island, you know, and I just remember that it was really interesting to me the way that they sort of explained things, because in a lot of ways, you know, Rick is supposed to be your gateway into this world, because he's trying to figure things out at the same time that you are as an audience member. And I remember even as a kid feeling that way, that Roy is basically explaining what's going on, right? As he's explaining what's going on to Rick, he's explaining to the kids at home what's going on as well, so they can kind of get caught up in that world and understand what's happening.
Yeah, for sure. And it, again, like I said, it is, and it's weird for me too, because like I said, when I remember as a kid, when I came into this, it was partway through episode two and I didn't even get episode one. I did not see episode one until several years. I mean, we're talking like high school when I actually managed to, again, I talked about this before, when they would do those movie screening rooms at conventions. I was at a sci-fi fantasy convention in Memphis. I don't remember which one it was. And they had a screening room and they would play different things throughout the day. I talked before about Aliens, you know, seeing the, you know, the laser disc version actually has the opening that actually shows Newt's parents. That was how I first saw the very first episode of Robotech. I had not seen it up until that point. and my mind was just kind of like blown, because I didn't understand. I knew there was mysteries surrounding the SDF one, but because I skipped around so much as a kid, I didn't have the full picture. And I was like, oh, so that's when I realized, oh, this is an alien craft that they went in and they retrofitted the tech and then tried to upgrade it, integrated into their systems. And it was just kind of, a lot of that was actually lost on me as a kid. I didn't really completely understand all of that until many, many years later. When I was high school age, and I actually got to see the first episode, and all of a sudden things began to click more. And I was like, oh, okay. So
it's actually it's a really important plot point, because it's something that comes up all the time, is the fact that that's why, not knowing that, you know, I almost wonder if as a kid, maybe you thought the crew was inept, you know what I mean? Like they just didn't know what doing, because I think you could easily assume that, because it's a constant issue in the series, that because this is alien technology, the crew doesn't know exactly how the ship works and everything like that. They have problems all the time. And so it's a really important plot point, is the fact that it is an alien ship that they don't really understand.
Well, and what I had thought that happened, it was actually like a captured ship. That in my mind as a kid, that's what I thought. I thought it was a captured ship and they had integrated some of their systems into it. I just didn't realize exactly what the whole deal with the SDF-1 was. I mean, as a kid too, I was kind of confused by the whole protoculture thing. We don't really get into that in these first two episodes, but the protoculture thing also confused me as a kid, because again, I didn't get to see all the episodes in chronological order. So because it was kind of haphazard all over the place, I was very confused on just the total minutia of what in the heck protoculture was, you know, up until, and all honestly, probably about, I don't remember when my brother gave me this complete DVD box set, but it was quite a few years ago. But that was the first time I actually had the chance, because I was working from home for DC Comics at the time. And so I actually put these DVDs in and let them run and play in the background while I was working. And all of a sudden I was like, oh, okay, now I get it. Okay. And all of a sudden all the pieces kind of started to fall into place. And that was when I finally understood the larger tapestry of what they were trying, you know, to kind of put together over the course of the three various iterations of the show.
Yeah. It's very easy to lose that stuff, because again, these are three unrelated shows. So a lot of the stuff that actually holds the shows together, they're just like almost like throwaway lines in the narration. You know what I mean? Because it's not something that was part of the actual show in Japan, but it was a way that they were able to link the shows together to make it, you know, one series.
And Masters for me was so confusing when I came into Masters, because so much had changed at the beginning of Masters. I was so lost. I was like, what? Like, I don't even, you know, just, it was just very confusing to me.
It's very easy to get lost in the show.
We jumped into Masters. But I still liked everything so much that I continued to hang on with it as a kid as best I could. But Robotech's an interesting, you know, series. And I think part of what makes it worth seeking out, at least when I was a kid, is because of the fact that it was challenging. That's one of the, you know, because I didn't see everything, I had to kind of put it together in my head, you know, and it actually helped to kind of fire my imagination, because I was kind of drawing my own conclusions about what was going on. So I was in some ways almost more vested in it, because I was bringing so much of my own viewing experience and my own personal experiences into it, little experiences I had as a kid, you know, like I was having to fill it in, you know, and that made it intriguing for me to find out, well, what really is going on? I have my theories.
Exactly. Yeah, it was really easy to get lost in this show, but it did challenge you, especially if you had that experience, which I think Dave and I both did, where you miss a few episodes and then you end up being completely lost and have no idea what's going on. Yeah, AJ mentions, he says, they dumb a lot of things down now. World building back then was full scope. You felt like they were alive even when you weren't watching them. And that actually hits home with me. More so because, again, I would miss a few episodes here and there, and then I didn't know what was going on. It'd be like all this other stuff had just happened, and I was completely lost. So,
And that's a unique thing to, again, I remember as a kid too, Robotech. It was one of the few shows where, again, you know, it did feel, I agree with Asia. I think it's very true that it seemed like that there was all, like they were still living their lives. If you missed it, you know, things were still happening. You just didn't know what was going on. You really felt that. Really felt that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. And I remember having that experience a couple times with a lot of the bigger plot points and stuff, because I would miss an episode or two before. And I was like, what the hell just happened? You know?
Do we have any other comments that relates to having actually seen the series back in the day, or do we want to go ahead and go to our next segment?
Asia had one more where she said, I loved the heroes felt human with failures. The enemies were not one-dimensional. And I do have to mention that Britai, I think that's how you pronounce his name, the leader of the Zentradi, ended up becoming one of my most favorite characters. You don't really get to see what I think made him so appealing necessarily in the first two episodes. He is actually a little bit one-dimensional in the first two episodes because, you know, he's just conducting the attack and kind of stuff, you know, that kind of a thing. But as the series progressed, I got into that character so much, the commander of the Zentradi. I really love that character. And so to me, he's right up there with like Darth Vader. I mean, I really, really love that character. And what they ended up doing with them and the Sentinels, if you're not familiar with the Sentinels, check it out. That was the failed Robotech sequel. Never came, but they produced like four episodes and I've actually seen them. That would be kind of a fun one to review in the future because it's only like four episodes, but it's hard to get. It's hard to get because, again, that was the failed Robotech sequel, The Sentinels. They did some really cool stuff with his character, really cool stuff. So, yeah, definitely there was a lot of layering with the characters, regardless of what side they were on in this series.
All right. So we've talked about how we first heard about or found Robotech as when we were kids, when we were younger. We've actually now talked a little bit about what we thought about the series when we originally saw it. So now it's time to go to our last part of a Rogues retrospective. The last part's going to be talking about how do we feel about the series having recently revisited. Again, we are only primarily trying to focus on the first two episodes, but if you want to talk about Robotech in total, if you want to talk about it in whole, if you want to talk about Macross in whole, please share your thoughts. We want to know what you think. We'd be happy to put your comments up live here on the show. So tell me, Eric, we just recently rewatched these first two episodes. I found myself going down the rabbit hole, watched all the first six. tell me, what did you think of the first two episodes, having recently revisited it?
It's funny that all the plot points, the major plot points, are still fresh in my mind, even though I have not watched this in a very long time. This is the version that I watched over here. This is from the collection that Harmony Gold did years and years ago, from ADV Films. As far as I know, this particular version is no longer in print. It does actually contain the first six episodes. I only watched the first two for this review, but it does contain actually the first six episodes. I think it's getting a little harder and harder to find this version of it actually, but this is on DVD. So this is the version that I watched. It's interesting because all the plot points, despite the fact that I haven't watched this in a very long time, all the plot points were fresh in my mind. I remember the fact that they had all sorts of problems with the SDF-1, that the really funny, well, it's funny, but also like a disaster when the gravity, the anti-gravity engines don't work right. They actually tear through the ship. I remember all that stuff because they were having so many problems. And again, the Rick Hunter basically being the eyes for the kids to kind of explain what's going on in the world and why they have these transformable robots. I remember that was a big deal. A lot of us kids thought that was a really interesting twist. That's why the planes have to transfer into robots, is because the Zentradi are 50-foot tall giants, you know. So I remember all those major plot points. What I didn't remember, and watching, you know, now as an adult, is just how goofy it was. There is a lot of goofiness in it, and it is very typical of a lot of anime. I Hero Academia with my kids because they all love that show, and there is a lot of that anime goofiness in Robotech. There's just no doubt about it, and I'd kind of forgotten about that. That's probably the thing that took me back the most, is just how goofy some of the stuff is, in Robotech and in particular in these first two episodes. So that's what stuck out to me. What about you, Dave?
Well, I think for me, recently having revisited, I thoroughly enjoyed it. Like I said, I ended up going ahead and doing the whole first six episodes while I was watching it. It took me back to when I was a kid, whenever I watched, you know, things like Robotech or Transformers or G.I. Joe. Whenever I watch the original episodes, it always takes me back. And I honestly just thoroughly enjoyed it. The things that surprised me the most, which we bring up here on this show a lot, and apparently my experience growing up is not the same experience I feel like it's an experience a lot of us had growing up, but there's elements that want us to think differently. But, I noticed the fact and I remembered, but just the multinational status of the crew. Like, we've got people from all over the world because, you know, they pulled kind of the brightest and the best to, you know, recondition and figure out how to retrofit, how to use the tech from the crashed alien ship, which was the SDF-1. We have this crew that's from all over the world working together, this you know, kind of UN in space idea, which also I remember learning about and seeing in Star Trek. And it's always kind of these kind of things you're seeing as a kid and growing up actually helped to kind of inform my worldview. And I thought, you know, all of us working together didn't seem strange to me. I remember watching Robotech and I never questioned any of that because it was just like in Star Trek and a lot of the other stuff that I had seen growing up. But I think I only thought about that because of the narrative that we have a lot of times going on in the media today, that, you know, that a lot of these things are brand new and science fiction didn't do these things and it's just kind of weird because I keep seeing examples of where they were kind of doing it, you know?
Right. But
again, my experience apparently is not a lot of other people's experiences, but I thought about that just because of that narrative that there's a lot of talk about. Secondly, rewatching it, the crew struggling with the ship as much as they do is a little weird. I mean, it makes sense. I think that was one thing that I kind of thought about at one point. But at the same point too, like I said, it doesn't take me out of the show per se, but I did kind of think about that. And then the third thing about the show that struck me revisiting it is how just wildly fantastical, yet at the same point grounded in the human experience, even though it's an animated cartoon, the show is, because it gives you all that soap opera drama. The whole reason I went six episodes in before I turned it off is just because it's Robotech. That's the way it works. The melodrama elements are there. I think as a kid, sometimes I felt the fascination with Minmay a little annoying, and maybe that's just me. I don't know why I found Minmay annoying, but I was not team Minmay. I was team Lisa Hayes. I don't know why, but that was just me as a kid. And even as an adult, I find myself in the same place. But I found Minmay not as annoying as I remembered as a kid, because sometimes I felt like I don't know what it was about Minmay I didn't like, but something about her just rubbed me the wrong way as a kid.
Well, she's she's very selfish. She's a very selfish character.
That's true.
So there's no doubt about that. But it's also, you know, in my mind, it's also because she's young. She's just a very young girl, you know. So
well, and that's the thing that makes it, again, this makes the show really interesting. That's one of the things I still find surprising is, at times, all the melodrama mixed with the action and all these other elements and all the crazy science fictional stuff and just how it all kind of comes together to create its own unique thing that isn't really like anything else. As many things as we've seen to this point, when you want to talk about, you know, science fiction and science fiction shows, you know, becoming serialized, we see movies kind of becoming serialized, even with the MCU, where you got to watch the next movie to know what's going on. And it's interesting to me how much of a pioneer, in my mind anyway, this show was. And then when you think about it in the context of, oh, well, these are three separate shows that they cobbled together into this narrative that they created. It's even trippier and crazier to me. But those are the things that stuck out to me is how kind of trailblazing, in a sense, this animated series was when I think back on all the things that I watched as a child. And I can't help but kind of, when I look at it analytically, I can't help but think about those things. And there are some stuff that's kind of weird, Eric. I mean, I agree with you. There's some things that seem a little out of place kind of here and there. But I just honestly am just still impressed with Robotech to this day, with what they were able to do. I've seen other people try to do something similar and it not work.
Yeah, I think it was a trailblazing show. There's no doubt about it. Aegis says, it really holds up. I feel like we were ahead back then, and the positive from that narrative is being lost. Also, they had a strong female presence throughout the series. That's one thing that I had forgotten, was that other than the captain, the entire bridge crew is female, which I think is interesting. I didn't remember that until I watched it recently.
And it's just interesting to me, again, just the tapestry of the show and where the characters interrelate to each other. And it's just a really good show. And the other thing I thought I found a little, it's weird looking at it analytically. I mean, I know it's there because I've seen it before. And Robotech is something, it's not something I revisit every year. You know, it's just something I put on every couple of years, just because there's so much to it. I mean, once I start down that rabbit hole, it's hard for me to turn it off. And the thing that's interesting to me too about Robotech, looking at it now, revisiting it, is the stakes that the show has. I mean, when they do their jump drive, star drive thing, I can't remember what it's called. When they space do fold. their space fold, how they just rip, you know, Macross Island completely out of the planet. They float into space and they kill all these people and destroy all this stuff. It's when they do the first this is an episode past the ones that we're reviewing, but even when they, you know, activate the SDF-1 and they do the transformation sequence to activate the main guns against the Zentradi, you know, the damage that's done to the city and the people that die in the midst of that too, it's just crazy to me the level of stakes when you want to talk about the loss of life and property. I mean, every decision that Captain Global makes seems like it's always, you know, he's got everyone's lives in his hands, even more so than I think just about any other science fiction show I remember watching as a kid. And revisiting it now, when you think about how much they try to sanitize things for kids, the level of just actual deaths and the level of stakes that are going on in this show, it's pretty impressive. That this was something that was even packaged and presented to kids anyway.
Yeah, it is. It is amazing how much they actually got away with. I know specifically I've done some research on Voltron, and they had to cut a lot of stuff out of Voltron from the Japanese version. And while I'm sure they cut things out, you know, from the original Japanese version for Robotech, they left a lot of that stuff in. I mean, they left a lot of stuff in. There was really no other show like it at the time. It just wasn't.
Very true, very true. Do we have any other comments from the Rogues Gallery relating to Robotech, the Macross saga?
It's that Min-May sucks. And again, I will say I was actually Team Min-May. I never understood the Lisa thing. I thought Lisa was too old.
I didn't have that issue. I didn't have that issue. I've never had that issue, but maybe that's just me. Like I said, I just Lisa Hayes appealed to me. But that just for some reason, that's my whatever. There you go. I don't know how to describe it. All right. Very cool. All right. Unless we have any other comments from the Rogues Gallery, I think we're probably good to go ahead and move on, to some of the other topics. I know we're going to get in some, probably some pop culture news next, right, Eric?
Yeah. Incidentally, I don't know of any place that's currently streaming Robotech. Again, like the version that I have, you know, just has the first 6 episodes. I don't think it's even in print anymore, although I think there are a Blu-ray that's going to be coming out. And then also Fundament is going to start streaming it again, I guess, sometime in the fall. So if anybody's interested in that, a way of getting a hold of it, because it's not streaming anywhere right now. Funimation is supposed to be putting it back out there in the fall. There's not an actual release date, although that Blu-ray is supposed to be coming out, I believe, in September.
And I did do some searching, and there is actually, if you're curious about Robotech and you haven't seen it, there are episodes posted on YouTube. I don't know if I'm supposed to say something like that, but if you search on YouTube, there are episodes on YouTube too, if you want to search them out.
I'm E. Hardy.
I'm just saying, they're on there if you want to find them. All right, there you go. All right, so we're going to segue over into pop culture. Again, the pop culture news is just sort of like interesting things that's happened in the world of pop culture that piques mine or Eric's attention. And we always hope it is something that you will also find worthy of discussion as we like talked about in the pop culture news. I don't have anything for pop culture news this week. I've got 1,000 things going on. It seems like all at once. It feels like I'm doing 4 jobs every day. It's absolutely getting insane. But I know that Eric definitely has some stuff. What do you want to start with first, Eric?
I just wanted to briefly mention this because I had wanted to talk about this on Friday, but we were going a little long, and we're going a little long today. So I'm not gonna spend much time on this. Because there's not a lot of information anyway. So this is a Variety article. This is an older article. Again, I had originally wanted to talk about this on Thursday. But it looks like, you know, according to this article from Variety, which it says, Pokemon live action series in early development at Netflix from Lucifer's Joe Henderson. So check this out if you're interested. It does look like they are currently exploring a Pokemon live action series on Netflix. I know that there's a lot of people that are concerned about this, and I imagine there's a lot of people that think this is a great idea. The only thing I can weigh in is say that I'm not a big Pokemon fan myself, but I did see Detective Pikachu with my kids. We went and saw that in the theater, and I enjoyed it. So I actually think that Pokemon definitely can work as a live-action series, and I'm hopeful that the series is fun and it's good, and I don't know, maybe it'll actually get some more people, if that's even possible, into Pokemon. Because like I said, I'm not a big Pokemon fan, but I actually like Detective Pikachu. I don't know if you have much Pokemon experience yourself, Dave. Like I said, I never really got into the cartoon series myself, but I've seen the live action movie.
I did watch a lot of the original, the anime series. I did watch quite a bit of that. Primarily because my brother was watching it, so it gave me something to talk with my brother about. And then I saw, I think it was the first movie that was in movie theaters. And I also saw Detective Pikachu as well. So I could see that depending upon how they approach it, you know, it could work and it could be fun. So we'll just have to wait and see what they decide to do with it.
Yeah, a lot of people that are concerned about it, they're concerned that Netflix is doing it. Would you have any kind of concern about the fact that it's specifically Netflix that's making this adaptation?
Well, I mean, I guess I'm going to say no because there's not... Initially, I'm going to say no because Pokemon's pretty set in stone. I mean, you know, you can kind of change some things around or whatever to an extent, but... I don't see there need to be as much reason to mess with it as much as people feel like they need to mess with other things because they need to update it. You know, Pokemon's, when it's compared to a lot of the other stuff we talked about, it is a much newer show, number one. And then number two, there have been very recent adaptations, both live action, you know, and animated and recent video games. So I personally, on my initial blush reaction, is going to say, I don't see any reason for them to tinker with it too much, other than to just hopefully just try and create a good live action show should they decide to do that.
There you go. Yeah, I hope it comes out well. Like, again, I enjoyed Detective Pikachu. So I would have, a cautious optimism, as I often do with things like this. And I'm not a big Pokemon fan. I mean, I'll admit that, but I enjoyed the live action film. So now the other one that I needed to go ahead and cover, Dave and I are both big Trekkies. So this is some interesting news. And we were talking about this at the beginning. Dave wasn't aware of this. So this is actually some breaking news. Pretty interesting. So this is from Deadline. And the headline reads, Alex Kurtzman inks mega new overall deal with CBS Studios. So it says, Alex Kurtzman, the top producer on CBS Studios roster and architect of the studio's Star Trek universe, has closed a massive new nine-figure overall deal there for his secret hideout banner. No financial terms are being disclosed, but I hear the pact is in the $150 million range, putting Kurtzman in the very top tier of television writer producers. The agreement will keep Kurtzman's secret hideout at CBS Studios through 2026, giving the studio exclusive rights to the company's projects for all platforms, including a series adaptation of Stephen King's short story, The New York Times, at special bargain rates. Additionally, Kurtzman will remain at the helm of the growing Star Trek franchise for the next 6 years. Heather Kadeen will continue to lead the Secret Hideout content team, along with SVP Aaron Bayers, sorry if I'm pronouncing that wrong, and Director of Development Robin Johnson. Under the new deal, Secret Hideout will expand its ranks with additional executive hires. So this is sort of breaking news right now, a big thing for anybody who's a Star Trek fan. I'm going to tell you right now, I hate new Trek. I can't stand what Kurtzman has done to Trek. I think he's done incredible damage to the brand. But apparently CBS Studios does not agree with me. So I'm curious, Dave, because I know you said you hadn't really heard of this until I mentioned it to you. What do you think about this big, huge deal that Kurtzman is here to stay?
Well, I am looking forward to, I know a lot of Trek, that's not right, Hollywood. Hollywood Jackson says Worf Picard. That is
Worf Picard. That's right, Hollywood. Worf Picard.
Well, in addition to that, I heard they're actually going to be doing at least, seasons 2 and 3 of Picard. I had heard that. First season Discovery, I could see the issues, but it was okay. I mean, I kind of liked it, but I wasn't like a huge fan, but it was okay. Season 2 of Discovery, I liked a lot more because I enjoyed the stuff that they did with Pike and bring that redesign of the Enterprise. I really liked Rebecca Romijn as number one. And those are the things I really, really enjoyed most. Like, I like Saru. And then there's the other stuff that I really didn't like. You know, we were trying to watch Lower Decks and we gave up on it part of the way through because Eric and I just didn't want to watch it because we both hated Picard so much. I hated Picard. It's one of the worst things I've ever watched in my life. I can't watch Next Gen anymore because of Picard. Like, if a Next Gen episode comes on, I turn it off. I have not rewatched a single episode of Next Gen since Picard. I really do not like Picard. And then Asia said that Discovery she can't stand. And then she, well, here's the thing. I am looking forward to Strange New Worlds. I have high hopes for Strange New Worlds because I really liked Anson Mount and I really liked Rebecca Romijn. And I love the redesign of the Enterprise in Discovery Season 2. So I have high hopes for Strange New Worlds. And actually, I saw the trailer actually for Prodigy. And even though there's things about Prodigy I don't understand, and I didn't think I'd want to watch the Nickelodeon show, the Prodigy trailer looked kind of interesting to me. But, you know, giving Kurtzman this much money and the reins for Star Trek, I don't know. I don't know how I feel about it. For me, it's a mixed bag. I know there are a lot of people who feel like Eric who just hate new Trek just in general. I can totally understand that. There's a lot of things, even in the stuff that I liked that I did not like at all. I guess I have mixed feelings about this. You know, hopefully the stuff that comes out, like hopefully Strange New Worlds is good. You know, I might check out this Prodigy show. Hopefully the Prodigy show is good. But I don't understand. I guess for me, it's weird because, you know, Kurtzman and Secret Hideout, isn't that attached to J.J. Abrams?
Well, Eric? Originally it was.
Yeah, originally?
I don't think that's the case anymore.
So it's its own separate thing.
It's sort of like, it's, you know, Kurtzman worked, you know, with Bad Robot. That's the connection.
Okay.
But Secret Hideout is Kurtzman's company.
Okay. So, okay. You know, I just
he got involved because of JJ. There's no doubt about that. That's how he got involved in the first place, because he was part of Bad Robot. But Secret Hideout is Kurtzman's company. That's his own thing.
I guess my big thing is that for me, I just kind of found it frustrating that JJ Abrams was given the keys to so many different sci-fi franchises. And there's some sameness, right? That's my biggest complaint. There's a lot of sameness between a lot of this stuff. So
a lot of lens flare.
Yeah. So I don't know. I mean, we'll see if this turns out to be a good move or a bad move. I'm just going to say I have definite mixed feelings about it.
So the thing that I'll say is, obviously this does go counter to what a lot of, I would say, classic Trek fans like myself have been saying, or feeling that New Trek is not successful, because it seems impossible to me that that Paramount and CBS, basically it's officially what Viacom CBS, I think, is actually the official name of the company, that they would rehire this guy if all the stuff was a bomb. So we don't have any numbers, Paramount Plus, whatever it is now, they don't give you numbers, so we don't know how well they're doing. Nielsen doesn't even track them, which I think is interesting, that they're not on their top four tier list. So Nielsen doesn't even care what's going on at CBS All Access, literally. I mean, that's the absolute 100% truth. We cover the Nielsen ratings from time to time, on this platform, and they don't rate shows from Paramount Plus. And their subscription base just doesn't compare to the top four being, Amazon, Netflix, Disney Plus, and I believe Hulu is the other one that Nielsen's actually tracks. So it's interesting in that regard, but I can't imagine that they would rehire this guy if the numbers were that bad. So the numbers must be better than a lot of us think, but I, for one, will not support any of this crap. I'm done with it. As long as he's at the helm, I'm not going to support any of this stuff. I'm not going to give him my money. I can vote with my money, and that's what I choose to do. I really wish they would give someone else a chance, at the reins, to see if they could mend the divide in the fandom, because I think it's a bad thing. It's very un-Trek-like. The fact that he makes these things, I think, deliberately, and there's quotes out there. He deliberately wants to divide people. He deliberately wants to alienate fans. He doesn't like Star Trek. He is a Star Wars fan, same as JJ. So that kind of stuff puts a really in my mouth. So, I haven't seen the Prodigy trailer, and I don't intend to. So that's where I'm coming from.
All right. Well, there you go. We do have some comments over there in the Rogues Gallery here. I think like that what relates Hollywood to this. Says,
bring back Captain Kirk, have him sing Rocket Man. There was actually something on William Shatner's Twitter recently where there was somebody said something about Rocket Man. He was going off, but if you want to be entertained, go to William Shatner's Twitter sometime, because he's always mixing it up with somebody. It's kind of funny. I wonder a lot if he really does manage his Twitter. I mean, he's 90 years old, and that his Twitter is so active, and he engages with people like crazy. So, but it's kind of funny. And there was a thing about somebody saying something like somebody was saying something bad about his version of Rocket Man. And he was going crazy. So,
right.
Asia says we found the Bad Robot secret hideout. I like that. Yeah, there we go. Bad Robot's secret hideout. It definitely, in a lot of ways, I feel like Kurtzman is almost like JJ's way of still keeping his clutches on track, So I definitely kind of feel that to some extent. And Bilbo Baggins by Spock. Yeah, far superior, actually, to William Shatner's Rocket Man, in my opinion. Plus, it's an actual original song. And he actually sings, so... Yeah, I've always liked that one, actually. Bilbo Baggins from the late, great Leonard Nimoy.
And then Aish also has a comment in here where she talks about agree to disagree, fam. She says, I still love you guys. We still love you, too. And that's one of the things that, you don't have to agree with us all the time. We don't have to agree with you all the time. But we still hope that this is a place where you can feel comfortable to come and talk and discuss these things.
Dave and I often disagree almost about everything. That's true. So if the host can disagree, then obviously the Rogues Gallery can disagree. There's never a problem with that.
Right. And when it's a topic that we're talking about, you know, feel free to voice why you love something or why you love something. You know, that's one of the things that makes this a fun dialogue, you know, between all of us, you know, fans talking about why they love something, you know, hopefully more so than why they dislike something. That's the reason why we stopped talking about all the Star Trek stuff, because it was not fun for either of us at one point. You know, I still love Star Trek. I still watch original series. I watch a lot of original series still to this day. So I still love Star Trek. There's just certain aspects of the new Trek that I'm not a huge fan of. And then we disagreed too. I specifically wanted Eric to watch Split Second because I thought Split Second with the Rutger Hauer film would be something that Eric might enjoy. And while he saw some of its merits, I'd like to think overall he's kind of like, I don't know.
Nowhere near as bad as Picard. That was nowhere near as bad as Picard. Like I'll say that 100%. It at least had some charm. But we did do a review of that. You can always check that out.
If
you look up on the YouTube or on the Facebook, you can find that review that we did of Split Second. But much rather spend time on that than any new Trek.
And yeah, I love Split Second to this day. I love that movie. It was a huge surprise to me when I saw it in theaters. Wasn't expecting much of anything and thoroughly enjoyed it and still do to this day. So see, it's okay. You disagree.
Exactly. Yeah, there's nothing wrong with that. I did want to bring this up real briefly because this is kind of weird, but I saw trending on Twitter. I thought it had some context to it. So Iron Man was trending on Twitter, and this is the reason why. So the Sunday Times came out with an article about basically it's titled. I have the actual article too, I think over here somewhere. The actual article was titled "Is Matt Damon the Last of Hollywood's Leading Men?" And then it goes on to say the actor is one of the world's biggest stars, but he's alarmed by the way cinema is changing. Is the A-lister one of a dying breed? Now, we've heard these kind of sentiments before from, I guess you would call it like old Hollywood or classic Hollywood, however you want to view it. You know, there were the pretty controversial comments that were made by, I think Scorsese was the one who kind of started kind of ragging on comic book movies and things like that. That was a while ago. And you know, there's been blurbs like that ever since. I remember Jodie Foster was saying some stuff at one point. You keep hearing this stuff, especially from people that aren't involved with comic book movies. They seem to be piping off about this stuff. But this is the interesting part of the article that got Iron Man trending. So apparently in the article, which, by the way, I can't actually pull up the article because it's got a paywall. So I can only just reference a little bit. But this is part of the thread on Twitter. This is what it says. The big titles of the past decade are brands and franchises established in numerous prequels and sequels. Robert Downey Jr. is a leading man, but his Iron Man could be played by almost anyone with wit. The character is more important to audiences than the actor. I really thought that this was like the worst possible example that they could use to make what otherwise could be a valid point. In fact, I think you could almost take any other MCU character and you might be able to make this point. But this was absolutely the worst choice because I've said it a million times on this show and I'll say it again. I always thought of Iron Man as a cheap ripoff of Batman. I'm a DC guy. I've always thought of him that way. And I had almost no interest in seeing the Iron Man movie when it first came out because I just never was into the character. Again, I thought he was basically a ripoff of Batman. I never was that into him. He wasn't that popular for me when I was growing up either. And I love the movie. And I think we all acknowledge, I mean, this is what started the MCU was Iron Man. And it was absolutely Rodney Downey Jr.'s performance that made Iron Man as popular as he is today. There's just absolutely no doubt in my mind. So I just of all the examples you could use to try to make this point, this is absolutely the worst one. And Dave, I know you weren't, we talked before, you weren't really aware of the situation. I really want your reaction, especially as someone who's been in the comic book industry for so long. I mean, I can see like the overall point in some ways of the character overshadowing the actor. I mean, look how many people have played Batman. Look at how many people have played Spider-Man. To me, that's the low-hanging fruit. But Iron Man and Rodney Downey Jr., that's not the low-hanging fruit to me. What do you think, Dave?
Well, I would just say, to prove your point, Iron Man is probably a horrible example because Robert Downey Jr. made Iron Man what it is.
Exactly.
And I can't, in my mind anyway, the only other actor who was discussed, I think, at one point or even talked about to actually play Robert Downey Jr. that we had rumors about for a little while was actually Tom Cruise. And if you think of Tom Cruise as Iron Man versus Robert Downey Jr. as Iron Man, those are two completely different things. And if you want to prove this point, if you really want to test the waters, Batman is going to be your low-hanging fruit because we're going to see real soon here, probably in the next couple of years, if it's Batman that sell these properties or if it's the actors who actually help sell these properties, because we've got very different versions of Batman in two different movies and potentially two different franchises about to hit the big screen. We got Flashpoint that's going to give us Keaton Batman again, which may or may not be the same one we remember. We're going to be getting Batfleck yet again. And we're going to be getting Robert Pattinson's Batman, which I imagine is going to be very different. And I know a lot of people are nervous, and I know a lot of people who actually don't like Pattinson for whatever reason that are not excited about him playing Batman at all. So we're going to see how true this theory is actually with Batman. Batman is your example because you can make an argument for it, one, and then number two, we have a litmus test coming up. That is the character to make this point with. You cannot make this point with Iron Man because even the What If series, even though Robert Downey Jr. is not doing the voice, there is an actor impersonating Robert Downey Jr. with his voice performance for even the cartoon. So the idea that anyone could be Iron Man because Robert Downey Jr. brought nothing to his portrayal of Iron Man, that anyone could be Iron Man, is so outlandish to me because a different actor playing Iron Man, everybody, we may not have the MCU. What do you think about that? That's what I'm going to say, because right. Robert Downey Jr.'s performance as Iron Man is what gives us the contemporary version of Iron Man. And if you don't believe me, go try to find the 60s Iron Man cartoons and watch those and then see how you feel about it.
Yeah, exactly. You know, Jane says it right here. When I think of Iron Man, I always think of Rodney Downey Jr. And that's I'm in that same camp. Because again, he wasn't a big comic book character to me. He wasn't in a lot of the animated shows when I grew up. He was a second grade D-list superhero. That's the way I thought of him. So I just feel like there is a point to be made in the context of this article, if they're trying to say like Matt Damon is one of the last of a dying breed or whatever, that kind of a thing. And I can get that concept of the character that overshadows the actor. And it really is about the character. Batman and Spider-Man are great examples. They're low hanging fruit. We've had multiple of those characters, but Iron Man and Rodney Downey Jr., you lost me. Whoever wrote this article, you lost me. And I think you lost everybody, because now nobody's going to even acknowledge your larger point, because you came up with such a stupid example and you showed the contempt these people have for genre. I've said that many, many times. The contempt Hollywood has for genre, and I think that even goes back to the previous article, why Kurtzman is in charge of Star Trek, a self-professed hater of Star Trek and lover of Star Wars is in charge of Star Trek, because to the bigwigs, it's all interchangeable. They don't like genre. They don't like sci-fi. They don't like horror. They don't like fantasy. That's they treat that stuff with absolute contempt, you know? And this kind of stuff just shows, it's like, geez, dude, do a little bit more research. If you were at least a little bit into this stuff, you could have come up with a great example that would actually make your point. Instead, you just alienated everybody because you made the worst point. You used the worst example possible to make your point. And it just shows that contempt they have of genre in Hollywood.
And it's interesting, too, because depending upon how you feel about the character of Superman, you know, we also have another example that we could look at where, you know, I like Henry Cavill as Superman, but a lot of people hated Man of Steel. And they don't like that version of Superman. You know, the Chris Reeve version of Superman, pretty much across the board with anyone you talk to, everyone loved the Chris Reeve version of Superman because of what Christopher Reeve brought to Superman. Like, right. Christopher Reeve made a stamp on that character, like Robert Downey Jr. as Iron Man. I feel like you can say the same thing actually about Keaton. Keaton's stamp on Batman, regardless of how you feel about the 89 movie and Returns, the stamp on that character looms large because of what these actors brought to those characters. Had it not been for the 89 movie, I don't know if we'd be talking about any of this stuff. And it's Keaton's unconventional casting and performance as Batman, because you wouldn't think he'd be a great Bruce Wayne Batman at first blush. Yet he also, like Chris Reeve, like Robert Downey Jr., sets a tone and a bar for that character. And it just, to my mind anyway, further proves the ridiculousness of this argument, because these actors breathe life into these characters, and their personality and their on-screen choices and performances inform us about who these characters are. That's why you get a great actor to play these characters. Otherwise, you could just get anybody to play them. And why do you even bother trying to cast them?
Well, that's kind of what the argument is here. That's basically what they're trying to argue, because they're clearly trying to belittle superhero films. And again, I feel that it's their contempt for genre films in general. I really feel that's where this article is really coming from. And I think there's a lot of other examples that they could have made the point, but this is the worst one. It's absolutely the worst one they could have gone with, especially when you consider the fact we've never seen another live action version of Iron Man. So it's like nobody else has played him, But the guy's probably smart enough. He wasn't going to go after Joaquin Phoenix for the Joker. And the Joker is a character that's been played by multiple actors. But he wasn't stupid enough to go after him, right? So it is what it is. Asia said, oh, for French toast's sake. They said the same thing about sci-fi movies in the 80s. Roddy Downey Jr. is the best Iron Man, like Hugh Jackman is Wolverine. By the way, that's another one that, apparently they wouldn't use, like they didn't go after Hugh Jackman, because he is so identified with the Wolverine character. And much like Iron Man, we haven't seen another live action Wolverine yet. There's a lot of rumors about the possibility. There's also rumors of Hugh Jackman coming back, by the way, to the MCU. But, we'll just have to see. Asia also mentioned, she said Tom Cruise would have been terrible, when you were talking about Tom Cruise earlier, Dave. Says Keaton is the best Batman, but she does support Pattinson. So very interesting.
Yeah, and so we'll see. We'll see as we move forward, because I'm excited to see the Matt Reeves Batman film. I hope it's going to be good. Batman is a character that can be reinterpreted in a lot of different ways. There's room for expansion. There's room for reinterpretation. But I feel like that in reference to that last article, that's one of the stupidest examples you could ever use, because
it is like the stupidest. I would go after, Thor, or go after the Hulk. There's been multiple people that played the Hulk, and the Hulk
Captain America
has been successful. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But no, this guy goes after Roddy Downey Jr.'s Iron Man. So, okay, whatever. You lost.
And literally there are so many other examples, whether you want to talk about Captain America, whether you want to talk again about Superman, like there are so many other examples that you could use to try and improve your point. And as a casting director in Hollywood, I would take super high offense to this, because that casting director's job is to find the perfect person to hopefully bring something new. That's the most important thing that people tend to forget about. Whenever you do a new movie or a new adaptation or a new TV series or animated series, whatever it is, the casting director's job is to try and find something new,
right?
To a new dimension of these characters. And it's the actors typically, besides just the writer, who actually brings something new to these performances. And again, I apologize for my dogs. I don't know what Ripley's barking at, but she barks at everything.
It's okay. It's like, we can hear you still. So that's the important thing. But yeah, I don't know. I just think it just shows that they don't even know what they're talking about. They could make a good point, and I could even see where they're coming from, but because they're so contemptuous and don't know what they're actually talking about, this is what happens. Oh, was it Ronnie Downey Jr. in some Superman film? Oh yeah, Iron Man. Yeah, let's use that as an example. I feel like that's what the writer was doing. Like, I don't know any of this shit. So, you know, I'm just gonna. What's the one I do? Oh yeah, Ronnie Downey Jr. did one, right? That's where I feel like they're coming from.
And Asia makes a very, very good point. She says that Black Panther was a casting goldmine. And Asia, you just proved our point. Like, you know, just like Eric was proving the point with how ridiculous is Robert Downey Jr. Because Chadwick Boseman is Black Panther, and his
legacy. Why didn't they go after him? Why didn't they go after him in this article? You know what I mean?
So. His legacy is going to loom so large with this character that I don't think we're going to see another actor portray Black Panther or T'Challa anyway. We may get a new Black Panther, but it's not going to be T'Challa. It's going to be someone else. And it's going to be that way for a long time, because Chadwick Boseman's performance as Black Panther goes on the same shelf as Robert Downey Jr. as Iron Man and Chris Reeve as Superman. It was that great, and it's that important when you want to look at genre entertainment because of what Chadwick Boseman brought to that performance. It's legendary. It's going to stand the test of time. People are going to continue to talk about it. It's like William Shatner as Captain Kirk. You know, like it just goes to show that these actors have a very important role to play in genre entertainment. And I don't think that you should belittle it. It's, you know, for fans, for people who pay money to go see movies, it's important.
Yeah, I totally agree. Totally agree.
All right, there you go. All right. Do we have other comments in the Rogues Gallery you want to highlight here before we go to the outro, or do we want to go to the outro?
It just said, Ripley says there are Xenos in the area. Something you missed in the plans. So.
Game over, man. Game over. There you go. I'll just grab up Ripley and whoever else is in the house. And Eric, you need to go to your escape pod, because we're gonna nuke it from orbit. It's the only way to be sure.
The only way to be sure. That's right.
Only way to be sure. All right. There you go. All right. Very cool. All right. I guess if that's good, I guess we'll go ahead and move on to the outro. I want to thank you for helping watching and listening to this episode of the Retro Rogues Live. Again, my name is Dave Beatty. I've been one of your hosts. If you're curious to see some of the stuff that occupies a lot of my time, you can check out my t-shirt company. That's KirbyTees.com. That's KirbyTees.com. Got a lot of fun things over there, such as, again, the Brains Are Magic t-shirt. We also have the new version of the Skeletor shirt. We do have a retail partner. I didn't get pictures in time. Hopefully I'll be able to announce that actually on Thursday to actually show you who our retail partner is. And I want to finish setting all that up. But there is an actual brick and mortar place you're going to be able to go in and buy Kirby Tees shirts here real soon. And a lot of more fun news about that to come up ahead down the road. Also, please check out the Retro Rugs Live t-shirts. Considering purchasing a Retro Rugs... I'm trying to talk too fast. Consider purchasing a Retro Rogues Live t-shirt for yourself and supporting what we're doing here on the show. We greatly appreciate your support. And in addition to that, please, if you know anyone who you think might like the show, might enjoy the show, please tell them about the Retro Rogues Live. Please share the links. Tell people about it. It's always fun when we get to have people involved in the Rogues Gallery and being part of the discussion. It's a very important part of the show. I want to thank my great co-host, Mr. Eric Alexander, for being on here and, as always, providing his unique perspective and point of view on all these fun pop culture topics that we like to talk about here on the show. Eric, please tell the folks hoping watching or listening at home where they can learn more about you on the interwebs.
Well, I'm most active on Twitter. You can find me there at BassGod14. That's at BassGod14. My DMs are wide open, so if you have show suggestions, rumors, something you want us to review, obviously our Thursday is Collector's Corner. We usually try to focus collectibles like comic, reading cards, action figures. Might be into more video game type stuff in the future. So if you have anything like that that you want to take a look at, please let us know. Send us a DM. That's also the official YouTube, although we're looking at switching that up. It's also the official Twitch. So if you make comments there, more likely than not, I'll be the one that's responding to you. And that's another way that you can interact and you can let me know what's going on. And I want to also reiterate, if you've missed any of the broadcast, you can always go back on those other forums, particularly on YouTube and Facebook. You can go back and you can watch the show and parts that you missed on the YouTube. We have like a lot of clips and things like that where we take certain parts of the show and cut it up. So please check that out again if you missed any of the broadcast. You can always go and check it out later. So Hollywood Jackson, we appreciate your support. He says, great show, guys. You are too kind. Jane is also says she enjoyed the show. We really appreciate that. And then I'm going to go ahead and let Asia have the last word. And she said, Muggles need to stop meddling in wizard stuff. And with that, we're going to go ahead and give her the last word.
We want to thank you for listening to this episode of the Retro Rogues Live podcast. You can learn more about Eric Alexander and Find the Live Show on either Twitch, YouTube, or Twitter by searching for BassGod14. That's BassGod14 on either YouTube, Twitch, or Twitter. If you are curious about co-host Dave Beatty, you can see some of his art, find social media links, and so much more at his website, DaveBeatty.com. That's DaveBeatty.com. If you enjoyed this episode of the Retro Rogues Live, be sure to like, share, and subscribe.